So, I was meant to do this episode on Wednesday, but then again, I got pretty busy and procrastination got the best of me. So, we're kind of late, but again, better late than never. All right, enjoy. Hello, everybody. My name is Sayed Moen. This is Moen's Gadget Talk for Thursday, 27th of January, 2022. We've got lots to talk about in today's episode. Xiaomi has launched the global variant of the Redmi Note 11 series. Samsung announces Unpacked for February 9th. Realme is launching the Realme 9 Pro Plus with a Dimensity 920. And we got so much more to talk about. So without further ado, let's get rolling, shall we? First off, earlier today, Xiaomi launched the global variant of the Redmi Note 11 series with four models: the Redmi Note 11, 11S, and 11 Pro, and 11 Pro 5G. So there's the 11, 11S, and the Pro and 5G variant of the Pro. 11 and 11S and the regular 11 also come in 4G variant only. The 11 Pro is the only one with 5G. These models are obviously a bit different from the China variant in a significant way. There are four key upgrades. Firstly, instead of a curved frame around the phone, you could say you've now got a flat edge frame design. Is inspired by the iPhone 12 and 13. It's pretty good from a durability standpoint. And then second, you've got high refresh rate AMOLED displays across the whole lineup. The regular 11, 11S, the Note 11, 11S, that is, feature a 90 Hz refresh rate display, whereas the Pro and the Pro 5G feature 120 Hz refresh rate display. So that's a, again, as I said, it doesn't do much and it might affect the battery, but then again, that's a pretty nice bonus, a pretty nice perk in a way. And then third, this isn't a big deal, but it's a welcome change, and now all variants except for the regular Redmi Note 11 feature 6 GB of RAM, up from 4. The regular Xiaomi Redmi Note 11 will only have 4 GB of RAM starting, but you can get a 6 and 8 GB RAM variants with that too. So again, not a big deal, but it's pretty nice to have. And the fourth big deal, sort of, you could say, is the cameras. The 11S Pro and Pro 5G from Redmi feature a primary 108 megapixel Samsung HM2 sensor, which is pretty cool in its own right. But then again, megapixels don't really matter here, but at least you've got a solid set of sensors that'll do the job for a phone costing well below $300. So that's the Redmi Note 11 series. It's pretty interesting phone in of itself. To start with, the regular 11 11S, the Note 11 and Note 11S will come in graphite gray, twilight blue, and star blue, whereas the 11S only comes in twilight blue and pearl white. So that's something to note. So there's no star blue on the 11S, so that's pretty interesting. So you get a gradient finish, and the Pro comes in graphite gray, polar white, and star blue for the regular Pro 4G, and the 5G Pro variant comes in graphite gray, polar white, and Atlantic blue. Looks pretty interesting if you ask me. And in terms of specs, now you could basically split between the regular 11 and 11 Pro, but the 11 and 11S feature a 90 Hz 6.43-inch FHD Plus display, along with dual speakers, a 3.5 mm headphone jack, a side-mounted fingerprint sensor, dual SIM card and micro SD card slot as it is, with NFC capability and IR blaster, 5000 mAh battery with 33-watt fast charging out of the gate. But the differences really start with the cameras and processor and so on and so forth. The regular 11 comes with a 50 megapixel camera, regular 8 megapixel ultra wide, 2 megapixel macro, 2 megapixel depth, 30 megapixel selfie camera on the front. It comes with a Snapdragon 680 chip, so it's a Snapdragon chip. So if you're into that, we'd recommend this over the 11S or the 11 Pro, which come with a MediaTek chip. It's available, as I've mentioned earlier, with 4 GB of RAM or 6 GB of RAM, with either 64 or 128 GB of storage. So it's pretty interesting. The 11S bumps up pretty much. You get the 108 MP HM2 camera, the front sensor, the main sensor, you could say, at the back, with the 8 MP ultra wide sensor, 2 MP macro, and 2 MP depth. a 16 megapixel front-facing camera, punch hole notch right over there, Helio G96, and yeah, and the 11S, along with the Pro, the 4G and 5G variants, start with 6 and 8 gigabytes of RAM. You can have either of them, and 64 or 128 gigabytes of storage. I would honestly, genuinely recommend getting 128 gigabyte variant, because you'll get more out of your phone, and who knows, you'll probably run out of storage in some place. And if you already are spending a lot of money, you might as well get a 128 gigabyte variant at this point. So you can't go wrong with these phones in a way. And then you jump up to the Redmi Note 11 Pro 4G variant, which comes with the same camera as the 11S and the same processor as the 11S in a way. And but you get 120 hertz 6.67 inch FHD plus AMOLED display, and you also get that on the 11 Pro 5G. But on the 11 Pro 5G, interestingly enough, you don't get a depth sensor. You only get a 108 megapixel camera at the back, 8 megapixel ultra wide, and 2 megapixel macro. So definitely keep that in mind. If you want the depth sensor, you probably want to, you might prefer to get the 4G variant. But honestly, the 5G variant also will do the job, because you get a big sensor, a big main sensor, but genuinely also get other useful sensors like the ultra wide and the macro. So that's something to keep in mind. But yeah, it's again, it's a pretty interesting series of phones. You're probably wondering about how much these phones will cost. So for the base spec Redmi Note 11, that's about 4 gigabytes of RAM, 64 gigabytes of storage, expect to pay $179. Then to get double the storage, you pay $20 extra, $199, so about $200. 2 extra gigabytes of RAM on top of that would be $229. And then you step up to the Redmi Note 11S, base, it starts from $249, goes up to $300, which is its recommended retail price. The 11 Pro starts from $299, goes up to $349, and then the 11 Pro 5G is slightly, a little bit more expensive, but starts from base spec from $329, goes up to $379. So maxed out 11 Pro 5G will set you back $379. This is the recommended price. The actual price may vary. Do check with a retailer, of course, for actual prices. It may vary widely. This is Xiaomi's official prices, so do keep that in mind. If you're probably wondering when to get the phone, the 11 and 11S is going to be available this January, according to the press release. So I'm probably guessing next week, in a way. And the 11 Pro and 11 Pro 5G will be available from next month. So, but then again, the release will obviously be from market to market. So wherever you are, do check with Xiaomi's official reseller or Xiaomi themselves in the relevant, market for actual release information in a way. So we literally have two sets of devices. We got the 11 and 11S and then the 11 Pro 4G and 5G variant. Now, one thing I would want to point out right away is the 11 Pro 4G variant is not really, it's like a nice to have phone. You don't have 5G on it, but also you got a MediaTek chip, so it's kind of good in a way, you could say. And you get the fast charging and all that kind of stuff. Oh, and I would want to mention this, if you're getting the Pro, you're only getting a single SIM card slot and a hybrid card slot, which would either give you a choice for a second SIM card slot or a micro SD card slot, so keep that in mind. But you're getting an RR blaster and NFC, which is pretty good, honestly. I mean, it's good to see NFC on all these variants for the global market, because I do know for a fact that Poco, they would only offer NFC for certain Poco models, but it's probably owing to the fact that it's usually the rehash of the China model of Xiaomi phones. But that's something to keep in mind, so it's pretty interesting regardless. Now you're probably all wondering which Redmi Note 11 should you be getting. What do I recommend? Honestly, I'd pick the two models out of here if I were getting one for myself. The Redmi Note 11S and the 11 Pro 5G. You're getting a lot for your money. You're getting all the goodies of the best of the series in a way. The 11S, you get the better cameras, you still get a 90 hertz display, but it's not a big deal. It's not a deal breaker, but you get a better camera and you get the most amount of sensors in a way. And you get a good selfie camera to take some good selfies if camera is all that matters. The G96 will do wonders in a way. You get more RAM and storage if that's what you're going for. So if you don't want 4 gigabytes of RAM based spec, the 11S is a good deal. And if you don't care about Snapdragon or Heat or MediaTek, you definitely would go for the 11S. Again, if using MediaTek phones would not really affect the performance. And then the other phone I'd recommend is the Redmi Note 11 Pro 5G. The 4G variant is great, but you don't get 5G and you don't get the faster Snapdragon chip, which I think would be a waste, kind of. So, and the price difference you're seeing here for the Pro and the 5G variant, the Pro 5G, it's not that substantial. If you think about it, it's 128 6 gigabyte RAM capacity, 4G variant, that's $329 recommended. $20 extra, you get the 5G variant. So $20 is not much, but obviously add up markup and all, $350, $360-ish. I'd say the 5G is a better deal. So overall, the 11S and the 11 Pro 5G would be what I recommend, if you ask me, reading from specs. I don't know about the day-to-day performance or the software updates. That'd probably be a different story. But again, looking from what the phone comes with, the 11S and 11 Pro 5G would be what I'd recommend, given what you're getting here. Xiaomi have done a pretty cool job with the 11 series. It's a little straightforward. It's not confusing. At least here, what I can see from reading through these specs is there's a clear differentiator. There's some clear differences in that regard. The Pro obviously gets you everything for a phone for under $300, for under $400 at this point, looking from here, from the specs. So, again, pretty solid phone, regardless. One thing I kind of want to add is that there's also Redmi Note 10 series, and I've kind of talked about last year, obviously, which models you should be getting. Now, obviously, the previous generation is going to be on sale, and there's going to be some pretty good discounts from official Xiaomi resellers and certain retailers and stores that have lots of stock remaining of Xiaomi phones. So if you can also get those at a pretty good discount, I recommend that, obviously, on top of the 11S and the 11 Pro 5G. Nowadays, we have a supply chain crisis, so you got to be a little flexible with your options in a way. If you can get something pretty good at a pretty good price, then it is what it is, All right, another big story we kind of also want to touch upon is Samsung has announced that it's doing a Galaxy Unpacked on February 9th, so pretty much a whole week or two after this. So in the next week or two, or you could say within the next 2 weeks, basically. Now, it's obvious that Samsung will show off the Galaxy S22 series along with some new goodies from its Galaxy line. Probably new tablets, wearables, you know it. They'll probably have something to show at Unpacked on top of the S22. But Samsung has teased the S22 in a way. One teaser claims to show, quote, "break the rules of light," which is teasing improved low light performance in the S22's cameras, and that we should expect the most noteworthy S Pen, sorry. I'm going to pronounce it again. I'm doing it in one take, so, I might mispronounce something. But I'll repeat my point here. The most noteworthy S series ever created, which is obviously alluding to S Pen support in the Ultra and the rest of the phones. So, again, not many surprises. We almost kind of know. Is there something we don't know about the S22? It's kind of been leaked a lot. It's been leaked over and over, in a way. So there are only a few things we really don't know about, in a way. Probably availability, but we kind of do know it'll be available at the end of towards the end of February. So, not really a surprise if you ask me. But there probably are only a very, very few things that we don't know much. But Roland Quant, famous journalist at VinFuture, posted on Twitter about the S22 and specifically the pricing, stating that the S22 could be a bit pricey due in part to the shortages and supply chain issues that we've been having. Now, per his tweet that I'm going to pull up here, and I'll quote him here. Whoever said S22 series was to be cheaper didn't think of COVID, part shortages, and inflation. And then kind of goes on to mention the prices. So the base spec S22, 8 gigabytes of RAM, 128 gigabytes of storage, would start from €849. And then double the storage for €899. And then the S22 Plus base spec, €1,049. And that's before taxes and everything. So keep that in mind. And then double the storage for €1,099. So about €1,100 from the maxed out spec of the S22 Plus. The S22 Ultra base spec is €1,249. And then it sort of jumps by €100 for double the storage and 4 extra gigabytes of RAM. And then the maxed out spec, S22 Ultra, no 1 terabyte option, but only 512 gigabytes of storage, that would start at €1,449. So it's a little pricey. Obviously, they've jumped it up a whole lot. Not a whole lot, but again, it's jumped it a little bit, bringing it all. Now, that is in euros, so if you calculate it in dollars, it'd be even more. So Samsung's obviously increasing prices of their phones, but obviously there is the supply chain crisis and the shortages that are going on, in a way. So base spec, $849 is quite a lot, given that you have the Pixel 6, which is not expensive if you think about it, and really you have other options where, and also there's last year's Galaxy S21, which obviously would be at a pretty good discount if you can find it, that is. So yeah, so it's pretty interesting, given what we're seeing here with the prices. It is a lot, but as I said, you got to keep in mind with the current circumstances that €850 is actually a lot from 700, but again, let's face it, also you could say Samsung doesn't really have a significant margin like Apple, that where they can absorb that higher production cost in a way. Apple, obviously, if you remember very well, for the iPhone 13, I believe they maintain the same price, same starting prices like the iPhone 12, and they don't increase it. But then again, Apple has very healthy margins on the iPhone, so they can absorb that cost really well, whereas Samsung is selling it at almost nearly break-even, almost, if you think about it, or almost at a price where you could say they could make a little bit of money, and they can offer discounts down the road. So again, it's a pretty interesting development. But yeah, there's really very few things we don't know about these phones. So yeah. It's pretty interesting, nonetheless. Huawei has officially launched the P50 Pro and P50 Pocket globally. Both have almost the same specs as the Chinese version. You got the Snapdragon 888, 4G only, sadly, not 5G processor. No Google services. Instead, Huawei's own apps and services like Pedal Search and App Gallery. And in case you're wondering, App Gallery is okay, but again, you can't get YouTube or Google Drive or WhatsApp or those sort of services. You'll have to have Google Play, obviously. That's the standard, globally speaking, except for China, where every phone manufacturer has its very own app store. It's like a standard app store. I got no idea. I probably have no idea which is the dominant app store in China, but I'm guessing that's the manufacture the most installed units out there in a way. But again, now you're probably wondering how much these phones cost already if they're launching globally. In Bahrain, where I live at the moment, the P50 Pocket will cost 559.9 BD, so that would be about $1,480, so about $1,500 for the P50 Pocket. And the Pro will cost 439.9 BD, so that's about $1,160. That's about $1,100 for the P50 Pro. So one thing I'd say straight off the bat, it's a horrible deal, and I'm not mincing my words an inch. It's a horrendous deal. If you ask me, the P50 Pocket is a cool gadget, and I'm pretty much sure that there are very few nerds and gadget lovers or enthusiasts who would actually shell out around $1,500 for a folding flip phone. But honestly, it's probably a horrible deal when you compare it to what you can get for way less than that. The Z Flip 3 is $500 cheaper. You got 5G support. Google services are available in a way. In Bahrain, for context, the P50 Pocket's about 560-ish dinars. That's our, you know, currency. And then the Z Flip 3 is on 380 dinars, Bahraini. Some retailers will charge 400 dinars. It's not bad, honestly, once you start to look at it with the P50 Pocket, and especially what you can get with the Z Flip 3, at least there's 5G, at least you get better cameras, who knows, at least you get a solid phone, there's customer service, and there's a long list of things that make the Samsung option better than the Huawei's. But yeah, on these Huawei phones, you don't even get 5G support, which is a bit shameful if you ask me. I mean, I'd expect Huawei's phones, if they're the pinnacle of innovation and having cutting-edge connectivity, you know, having the fastest network bands around, given being Huawei, which is a network gear manufacturer that makes gear for cell networks, and has been boasting about 5G being this incredible technology and will connect and will give you a new set of apps and uses, and then their high-end phones don't offer 5G. It feels like a contradiction, you know. It's a horrible deal that way. So, and I don't want to get started on Huawei's services. They're great, but again, it's not like Google or something that you do not need to use Google Play. But you can use this, and there are some apps that you can get with the App Gallery. To be fair, there are some local apps generally that have managed to publish on App Gallery that you can get, if that matters in a way. But then again, it's a pretty horrible deal, and I wouldn't even recommend anyone to get these devices. In any way, honestly, it's a ripoff. You're getting some good specs for the money, but honestly, even for the money, it's a bad idea, honestly. If you already have if you have a main daily driver phone, like use an iPhone or something, you could say the P50 Pocket's a nice to have phone, a second phone you can have for the camera and for the features, just for the fact that it's a folding flip phone for funsies. But the price you have, you might as well get the Z Flip 3. I'm just saying, you know, it's a bad deal. It's a horrendous deal. Okay, rant over. It's a horrendous deal, plain and simple. Realme has teased the Realme 9 Pro Plus, calling it the first phone with the MediaTek Dimensity 920 5G processor in a European market. The Dimensity 920 for MediaTek is a 6-nanometer chip featuring two Cortex A78 cores and six Cortex A55 cores, low/mid-band 5G support, sub-6 5G, basically not millimeter wave, as I have to mention over and over again, 120Hz display support in the processor. We don't know what the 9 Pro Plus will feature, but it is looking to be a pretty competitively priced phone, given that Realme plans to grow its market share in Europe with affordable 5G phones like the 9 Pro Plus. According to QuantumPoint Research, a famous firm that obviously finds sales data and obviously reports it to the entire industry in a way, Realme has achieved 831% year-over-year growth in Q3 2021 compared to the same quarter in 2020. So, seems like they're daring to leap forward in the old continent. According to Bloomberg, and this blew up early today in a way. This came from Mark Gurman from Bloomberg. Apple is planning to offer the ability for merchants and small businesses to accept credit and debit cards without needing a reader or terminal, like the Square Reader from Square, the Jack Dorsey payment company. You swipe your credit card or tap on it to accept payments. Only an NFC-supported iPhone. Apparently, their claim that it'll be available with a software update in the coming months, most probably with the next version of iOS, from the looks of it, probably like a mid-year update after that major update, maybe iOS 16, and then they're going to offer it it in a minor update. But, so it's pretty interesting and surprising, honestly, because you will probably notice Apple lets you pay at lots of merchants and retailers that accept contactless payments with Apple Pay. It's been available all over the place, obviously. And if you get specific support applications like Square and all, and use their Bluetooth-supported readers or wired readers using a Lightning port or anything, you can accept payments. But this one's different, obviously. Apple is going to offer that directly. Now, you're wondering how Apple is able to provide such functionality. It's due to the acquisition of a company called MobiWave, with B-E-E, MobiWave, which they bought for $100 million. It's a significant figure. They've acquired the company for nine figures. MobiWave offer an identical product, allowing Android phones to accept card payments without a reader through the phone's NFC sensors. Now, one can assume that Apple bought the company to get this functionality for its Apple Pay offering for businesses generally, for merchants, for small and medium businesses in a way, for those mom and pop shops, for those food trucks that kind of have an iPhone and they'd want to use it for card payments in a way. And I might be planning to take on Square for merchant payment processing. We don't know whether it's only for Apple Pay or if all payment apps will be able to use NFC on iPhones to accept credit or debit cards. I'm sure they're only going to lock it up to their wallet app for Apple Pay for security reasons, because this is your card data. When you tap, all your card data is going to go through. So I bet Apple will probably offer it for their own Apple Pay service, and it's going to be a feature in the wallet app and the settings. You can turn it on and you can link it up and essentially take payments. But again, Apple processes it and through Apple, not through a third party app. And I'm guessing it's a security bit. So that's interesting in a way. But then again, we don't know much about this development. But again, it's pretty interesting. I can see the appeal for Apple to tap into a lucrative contactless payment processing business. I guess lots of small, medium businesses and merchants would want to trust the Cupertino giant with the debit and credit card payments over well-known incumbent market leaders, that is. Google is planning to offer a cheaper $35 Chromecast, according to Janko Rodgers, I hope I did not pronounce that name horribly, from Protocol. So he reported on this. Sources claim that this cheaper Chromecast will be a 1080p only model, so full HD, no 4K out of the gate, featuring and features a Amlogic S805X2 chip, so it's a little slower, but again, we'll do the job. 2 gigabytes of RAM, AV1 support, and will apparently cost around $35. This will compete with, say, the Fire TV Stick or the Roku Express, which cost around $20 to $35. Google might be looking to capture more of the streamer market in emerging countries, basically. Places like India, places like Japan and Asia. Japan's basically developed, but it's in Asia, so take it what you will. In Asia and South America, you know, trying to offer something to take on the Fire TV Stick. To beat Amazon, pretty much. So, it's who knows? It might be announced alongside the Pixel Watch down the road. So, again, pretty interesting. And if you're a gamer, you're gonna love this. Valve says that the Steam Deck will be available on February 25th. Customers who paid a $5 reservation for a Steam Deck will get an email on February 25th to purchase their handhelds. If you've picked your model in reservation, you can't change the specs during the order, so keep that in mind. Now, the delay for the Steam Deck, they've announced it late summer last year, and they were gonna ship it out in December, but it got delayed to February. And that probably was because of supply chain shortages, which has been affecting almost a lot of things in the world of gaming. Because, you know, GPU chips are hard to come by. That's a real issue. But finally, it's quite exciting to see the deck be available to gamers all over the world. So, pretty cool. Alright, if you're into streaming, you're going to be excited. And I think ever since this story broke out, it's been a pretty big development. I'll kind of kill the suspense. Disney has announced that they're going to be launching Disney Plus in 42 countries and 11 territories this coming summer. So Disney Plus has been around since 2019. It's launched in so many different regions. You could say it's been available in all the big streaming markets that are out there in a way. It's already been available in South Korea and Japan and India, in the US and the UK and Canada, in Australia, New Zealand, and Brazil, in all the major markets. And there have been a lot of major regions that have been left out from Disney Plus in a way. So notably in the Middle East, in the Gulf, in the GCC, as it is. So that's Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, UAE, Qatar, Oman, Kuwait. If you haven't been living under the sand, The reason why Disney hasn't been able to launch Disney Plus in these markets has been because of a kind of a new extended rights deal that Disney had with OSN, where OSN would essentially air all of Disney's movies and TV shows, along with Disney Plus originals on their channels and their streaming service. And for a bit, you could say until late last year, you could get all the Disney Plus originals, everything from The Mandalorian to WandaVision. So if you want to watch some Disney Plus originals, you'd go to OSN for that. But the past couple of months, you couldn't find Disney Plus originals on OSN streaming service. You can get the HBO shows, but like Succession and all, they're great. But you couldn't get Hawkeye, for example. And a lot of people pointed out, and even complained to OSN on Twitter, hey, you don't have Hawkeye, what is this? I'm paying a lot of money, you should have this show and that movie. So now Disney's announced that they're launching Disney Plus later this summer in the Middle East, North Africa, and Central and Eastern Europe, basically some of the kind of other related regions to Europe that haven't gotten Disney Plus yet. So they're going to get it, and it's pretty cool. I mean, because I've kind of been waiting for Disney Plus because, you know, it has a lot of content. Interestingly enough, even small islands are going to get the Disney Plus service. Now, it's strange, honestly. You could get Netflix and Amazon and Apple and all, because, as I said, those other services, they don't have their issues with rights and all. But if you live in the the small islands where you'll be getting Disney Plus finally after a long time are the Faroe Islands, French Polynesia, French Southern Territories, St. Pierre and Miquelon Overseas Collective, Åland Islands, St. Martin, Svalbard, and Jan Mayen. I'm sorry if I pronounced the names horribly or butchered them horribly wrong. British Indian Ocean Territory, Gibraltar, Pitcairn Islands, and St. Helena. Really interesting. So that's a pretty big expansion in a way. But as I said, I'm guessing that the rights issues have kind of gone away in a way. In that, if there were some exclusivity deals that were remaining that kind of have melted away, you could say. So it's pretty interesting. I was kind of seeing a post from Disney's Middle East page, and they announced Disney Plus was coming. And one interesting tidbit is that in the Middle East, you'll also be getting... So for context, Disney Plus has stuff from Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, Disney itself, the main studio, Walt Disney, and then National Geographic, and that's pretty much it. But if you live in Western Europe, usually, and Australia and New Zealand, you get an extra tab called Star, which has all the ABC, FX, and Hulu shows, and also the grown-up stuff, like the X-Files and Family Guy and Deadpool, and those kind of shows are not kid-friendly. They're not magical, family-friendly content, you know? So it's interesting they also mentioned that the Star tab will also be available, so that's pretty cool. So if you're into X-Files, or, again, if you're into some of the FX and Hulu content, you're going to love that. And I'm definitely guessing that the Hulu originals are not going to be on OSN anymore. They're going to go straight to Disney+. But then again, it's really interesting development. Now, they have not announced exact launch dates, prices, or anything like that. So I'm probably guessing that we'll find out about them probably sooner to launch. So, but if I were to kind of guess, I'm sure the launch prices will basically be a little bit appropriate for the MENA market, for the Middle East, kind of. I mean, if Netflix charges $10 for the HD plan, I think Disney will sort of slightly be around that price. So around 2 to 3 dinars for a subscription, or 20 to 30 dirhams or 20 to 30 reals. It'd be, you know, so maybe $5 to $10. Let's just put it out there. Maybe the regular price that you get in the US. So then again, it's pretty exciting to see that they are finally bringing a pretty magical service with lots of shows that I think we're all looking forward to. There's some great stuff on Disney Plus. I mean, on top of the big back catalog, you got stuff like the Book of Boba Fett, and then if you add the Star tab on, there's stuff like Dope Sick, which is pretty which I've heard great stuff about. But yeah, pretty cool service. I probably use it as often as Netflix, you know, so kind of a number two in a way. All right, we've come to the end of the episode. What do you think of everything you've heard today? Let me know down in the comments below, or obviously shoot me a message or a tweet. or again a message. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at @Sayid_Mao99. Follow me there if you can. And again, it's on the show notes, so do check it out if you forgot it. Subscribe to the podcast where you're listening right now. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Share it to your friends and family as much as you can, if that helps. And yeah, till next week, this is your boy Mao signing out. Take care, stay safe, especially what's going on out there. Wherever you are, whatever you're up to, have a wonderful day. All right, thank you for listening. Ciao.